This is 89.1 WEMU, and I'm David Fair, and this is our First Friday Focus on the Environment. On the first Friday of each month, we take on a topic related to the environment here in Michigan with Lisa Wozniak. And Lisa serves as Executive Director of the Michigan League of Conservation Voters and my co-host on First Fridays. And a Happy New Year to you, Lisa.
And Happy New Year to you too, Dave. It's always good to be here. And this First Friday, our guest is Abby Dumas. Abby is an assistant professor of women's studies at the University of Michigan. She's a medical and cultural anthropologist and noted researcher. And in fact, Abby's academic work will soon result in the release of her first book called Divided Bodies, Lyme Disease, Contested Illness, and Evidence-Based Medicine in the United States.
Well, welcome to the show, Abby.
Thank you so much. I'm so glad to be here.
Congratulations on your book as well.
Thank you.
Even though it's not the topic of today's discussion.
That's right. Yes, and I am indeed. I'm really fascinated by your area of academic study and your expertise. And we'll probably be able to talk about that a little bit more towards the end of this interview. But today we have you here to learn more about your personal role in a really important local effort that led to the Ann Arbor schools taking action to safeguard students from lead contamination in school drinking water. How did you find out that schools in Ann Arbor had elevated lead levels in the water coming out of their drinking fountains?
So as a medical anthropologist who works on environmental health and contested illness, lead and its health risks have been a longstanding interest of mine. So before my son started kindergarten in the fall of 2017, I reached out to APS for information about lead testing. And I wasn't made aware, actually, of...
How interesting. I would reach out and ask the lunch schedule.
Right.
I wasn't made aware of the district's 2017 water testing results until the following fall in 2018. And when I saw these, I was immediately concerned because they were quite different from those in 2016, which had been a smaller sample. And these showed much higher levels of lead across the district. For example, every building tested, with the exception of one, had some detectable level of lead. 39% of the buildings had at least one drinking water source above 15 parts per billion, which is the EPA's level of action. And 79% of the buildings had at least one source above 5 parts per billion, which as of October 2018 is the district's new action level. It's important to note that 15 parts per billion and 5 parts per billion are not health standards. There's scientific consensus that there is no safe level of lead, which is why the American Academy of Pediatrics recommends that lead concentration in school water fountains not exceed 1 parts per billion.
So what was the administration doing to tackle this problem?
At the time, they were, I think, lead testing started in 2016. That was the first year. And in 2018, we're in process of beginning to test more sources throughout the district.
But the students during that time still had access to the untested and untrustworthy water?
That's correct.
Why do you think that was the case?
At the time in the fall, we did, anticipating that there would continue to be high levels of lead in sources that were untested, we recommended and requested that access be restricted. I think in the end, you have a combination of regulatory loopholes. Schools still are not required to test for lead in their water. You also have outdated standards, like I mentioned, that aren't paired with health standards. But I think going forward, this is sort of a cautionary tale, both for the risks of a testing model, which we're moving away from, in which students continue to drink the water during the testing process, which has been sort of the old model, towards a new model, kind of in the middle of this paradigm shift, towards a new model in which filters are put in drinking and cooking sources, and students and staff have more immediate access to lead-free water.
Once the district became aware, and once you, armed with the information, went to them and said, we really need to further address this and do so more quickly, are you pleased with how the district has responded to this point and the direction they seem to be headed at now?
Yeah, you know, I want to commend APS for the work that's been done over the past year. The transition to filtered water, which is where we are, has been comparatively fast. I especially want to mention and thank Rebecca Lazarus and Brian Johnson, two Board of Education trustees. They campaigned on this issue, and it's continued to be an issue that's been important to them, and we wouldn't be where we are in APS without Rebecca's efforts. But yeah, at the same time, for the students who continue to drink the water during the testing process, one day of drinking that water was too long let alone many months. So
89.1 WEMU's First Friday Focus on the Environment continues. I'm David Fair alongside my co-host Lisa Wozniak, the Executive Director of the Michigan League of Conservation Voters. The other voice you hear today is Abby Dumas. Abby is Assistant Professor of Women's Studies at the University of Michigan, and we've been talking about lead contamination in Ann Arbor Public Schools drinking water.
It sounds like you worked really closely with drinking water experts and environmental groups during this time. Can you speak to the importance of tapping into that expertise?
Yes, it's a great question. I think tapping into expertise is always important to ensure that the ground that you're on is as up-to-date and as informed, as evidence-based as possible. I think it's particularly important when it comes to an issue that's as contentious and dynamic and multidimensional as lead in drinking water. This topic in particular requires expertise from civil environmental engineers, physicians, pediatricians, environmental and public health experts. So having that range of experts at the table to inform decisions that affect the health of really an entire community is critical.
You clearly took it upon yourself to initiate action with school administrators. Not everybody has your level of expertise or scientific understanding. What would you say to other parents and individuals about the power and effectiveness of being engaged, getting involved, and speaking up?
Sure, that's an important question. I'd say, like any movement, there's power in numbers. So I think an important first step is seeding awareness and then amplifying that awareness through forums like Board of Education meetings, PTO meetings, social media is an important platform, and petitions. Those can be an effective way of making a collective voice heard. I think in general, building coalitions and bridges across differences and being willing to collaboratively work with and not adversarially against decision makers is really important. I think at the same time, recognizing that while knowledge is power, power relations are always unequal. So this kind of work really requires persistence and perseverance and in the end time, which a lot of parents don't have the luxury.
Mm-hmm. So will you and any other parents that have gotten involved continue to monitor the Ann Arbor schools and the district response moving forward?
We are and we will and we will continue to do that. I think one of the great things about this is we've developed partnerships with the district and in particular with the Board of Education, and I am looking forward to maintaining that relationship.
Mm-hmm. This is 89.1 WEMU's First Friday Focus on the Environment. Once again, Lisa Wozniak is co-host, and we're joined by Abby Dumas, an assistant professor of women's studies at the University of Michigan.
So you've mentioned filter first. And so when we look at the state level action on lead in water, there's a bipartisan filter first piece of legislation that's been introduced, and it would create a framework for installing water filter stations in schools all across the state. The governor also proposed some significant funding in her budget to help schools actually install these filtration systems, but that was unfortunately not part of the package that ended up being signed. How are you here in the Ann Arbor area interacting with the legislature around the filtration issues or the budgetary issues or both?
I've been really excited to see and be part of working towards filter-first legislation and a filter-first approach in general. I think it's really exciting not only because it really is the only way to ensure reliable lead-free water for students and staff at school, but also because it's one of those rare public health opportunities that's both the most health-protective option and the most cost-effective option. So I think if we want to ensure that students and staff across Michigan have access to lead-free water at school, which I think we can all find common ground with, I think it's critical that this legislation requiring schools to install filters is passed. And of course, even though it's more cost effective than the testing model or what some have called the test and tell model, it still requires funding.
We know Michigan's new lead and copper rule is stronger than the federal lead and copper rule. It's triggered many municipalities in Michigan to send out alerts to residents about lead levels in the tap water. In your view, is the lead and copper rule just a stopgap measure or is it a solution?
I think any movement forward is movement forward and should be celebrated. And the more that people are aware at local, regional, state, and national levels, the better. Combining that with continued and consistent news coverage to keep things transparent and accountable is really important. So thank you for doing this. I think general grounds up grassroots awareness among pediatricians is really important. Michigan is a state that doesn't have universal lead screening, which requires children to be tested at 12 months and 2 years for lead exposure. That legislation, I think, would be really important, both raising awareness among parents, but also pediatricians. And the absence of that legislation, just encouraging pediatricians to test at 12 months and 24 months, I think is also important. Although that wouldn't reflect school-age children's exposures at school, it would reflect general sort of lead exposure risk.
Right, right.
So separate from your leadership on addressing lead and drinking water, your professional and academic experience is at the intersection of gender, health, and environmental risk. What's an example of an issue in this area that you believe needs more attention?
Well, it's funny. As I wrap up my first book, as you mentioned, on Lyme disease and contested illness and environmental evidence-based medicine, I'm turning my attention to my second book project, which is going to be on health, gender, and inequality, and I'm going to look at that through the lens of contaminated water in Michigan. So this would be a multi-sided project throughout Michigan that wouldn't just look at lead, but also at PFAS and 1,4-dioxane. And in doing so, would give attention to ideas and experiences of everyday toxic exposure sort of at the intersection of gender, race, and class to give us a better understanding of a relationship between environmental risk and what sociologists have called environmental privilege.
Again, the book coming out this fall is called Divided Bodies, Lyme Disease, Contested Illness, and Evidence-Based Medicine in the United States. It's being published by Duke University Press. And Abby, Happy New Year to you.
Thank you so much. Happy New Year. It's a pleasure.
And Lisa Wozniak, I always enjoy your company. Thank you for all of your efforts, and a Happy New Year to you and yours as well.
Happy New Year to you, Dave.
That is Abby Dumas, an engaged parent and University of Michigan professor of women's studies. Lisa Wozniak is executive director of the Michigan League of Conservation Voters, my co-host for WEMU's First Friday Focus on the Environment. I'm David Fair, and this is 89.1 WEMU FM and WEMU HD1 Ypsilanti.